The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The plethora of available options can make our health decisions complicated. Welcome to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with Stacey Starling. Our program is designed for you to question, take charge of your health, and find out which resources in healthcare and human services are available for you. Now, here is your host, Stacey Starling.
Welcome, and thank you for listening. This is your host, Stacey Starling. You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. On today's show, we're adding to our understanding of hospice services. Joining me is Wendy Bongero. Wendy is Vice President of Clinical Services with Residential Hospice and has been working in hospice services for 20 years. Wendy can be found at W-B-O-N-G-E-R-O at residential, R-E-S-I-D-E-N-T-I-A-L, hospice, H-O-S-P-I-C-E.com. You can find Wendy's email address on our website after today's show. In addition, there will be several other important links, and all this can be found at thestarlingcenter.org on the radio tab. To learn more about residential hospice, please visit their website, and remember to like the Starling Center on Facebook, connect with me on LinkedIn, follow me on Twitter, and all these links can be found under our show links. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you were able to join us today. I think this is such an important topic, and oftentimes our listening audience and other individuals out there in the world don't think much about hospice services until we are faced with that situation in our life.
That is so true. That is so true. People are fearful of the word hospice or death and dying, and it's not something that typically people in our culture tend to talk about, and as you said, until you're faced with those decisions.
And so I'm wondering if you'd be generous enough to just start the program out today by talking about what hospice care means.
Sure. Hospice is a means of providing comfort at the end of life, but providing quality of life. Hospice doesn't hasten the process at all. None of us know when the end is going to be here, and we can't determine when that will be, but we want to make each one of those days count, and so our goal is to provide dignity at the end of life, focus on pain management, symptom management, and it's a different type of centered care. It's not just patient-focused, but it's patient- and family-focused.
Talk to me about what dignity means. I heard you use that term, and I think that we all have our own meaning around what dignity might look like for ourselves. But in general, what does that mean, dignity?
Dignity to hospice means that we want to provide a death with dignity, meaning that each person, when we first meet them and provide a set up a plan of care for that person, each person has different life goals and things that they want to achieve when they know that they have a life-limiting illness. So by providing dignity, we're focusing on what the goals of that patient is before the end of life, focusing on what their, you know, quote-unquote bucket list may be, what things that they want to try to achieve for, you know, before the end is near.
I so appreciate the use of the term, you know, a person's goals or their bucket list, the things that are important for them to experience as they're nearing the end of their life, puts the human right back into the conversation, doesn't it?
It sure does. It sure does. We're so used to, you know, our whole lives focusing on aggressive means of care or curative means of care. And so hospice is really kind of changing that mindset that, you know, we can't change the outcome. We know this person has a terminal disease process that they've been diagnosed with. But what can we do to help make each day count? So it's just a little bit of different focus of care rather than curative. It's palliative in nature.
Who qualifies for hospice, or how does one qualify for hospice?
Well, that's a good question. There's so many different disease processes or life-limiting diseases that would qualify a person for hospice. But really, the only way to know if you're at that point is having those conversations with your primary physician, speaking to a hospice representative. For instance, residential hospice, if we're contacted and a family is just interested in hospice care and if they're, they may or may not be ready, we would send a nurse out to see the patient wherever they may be and do an evaluation, is what we call it, to determine if that patient is at the right time in their disease process. It's typically 6 months or less. But we have a lot of patients that are on service for longer because none of us really know when that time will be. So some patients may be on for longer, some may be on for a less amount of time. But it's typically Medicare states it's 6 months or less in your disease process.
Is that often then a referral from a primary physician? How does somebody know when it's time to contact you for that assessment?
Yes, it's typically, you know, having those courageous conversations with your primary physician. You know, if you and your loved one have a conversation and you just feel that you're just either exhausted in the treatment plan or you're just feeling like this curative route is not the right way to go anymore, having those conversations with your primary physician and really having open discussions about how you feel about that and then making a referral to hospice. And then, as I said, the hospice team can come out and do an evaluation to determine if you meet criteria. Yes.
What are some of the benefits to using a hospice service?
I would say the first benefit that comes to my mind is the support that you get from the hospice team. It's not just a nurse. There's so many members that make up the hospice team that support the patient and the family. There's the hospice physician. There's the nurse case manager, the social worker, spiritual care counselor. There's nurses' aides, which we call CNAs, or certified nurses' aides. Then there's also the adjunct therapies like music therapy, massage therapy, aromatherapy. Some hospices offer pet therapy as well. So different things that may, as I said, be able to support that patient in their goals and in what they may need to transition through each different phase towards the end of life.
That is so interesting and really informational to understand what a complement of services make up that support hospice team. I believe you started off by saying the physician. Is that accurate?
Correct. There's a hospice medical director, and that physician can either take on the care of that patient or the community physician that made the referral can continue to follow as well and collaborate and work together with that hospice physician.
Okay, great. So people don't necessarily have to give up their personal physician or if that's important to them, that it'll be a collaborative effort between the two?
Yes, not at all. If their primary physician wants to continue to follow them through the hospice process, by all means, then they work collaboratively with our physicians and we go to that physician for all orders and all collaboration and information and everything filters through that primary doctor. Yes.
I think that most people would probably expect that nurses, social workers, and CNAs or certified nursing assistants would all be part of that care team. But talk to us about the spiritual support. Help us to understand better what that might look like.
The spiritual support is such a wonderful part of the program. It's at no point in your life do you see where fear comes into play, questions come into play about what's coming, what's in the afterlife, what can I expect? Or they questioned their spirituality at this time of life more than any other time. So not only does the patient need that support to transition and ease their anxiety regarding what's to come, but the loved ones as well, to support them and allow them to, whatever religion they may follow, is more a focus on spirituality and supporting them where they're at. Using resources that we have within our team or in the community as well, if there's particular religious cultures and beliefs that we can do to support that patient and family as well.
And then the last thing I definitely wanted to know more about because I thought it was just so intriguing, you called them adjunct therapy services. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, that's correct, yes. It's an extra service. Not all hospices offer them. We do. Extra services meaning therapies that can help transition patients through anxiety or pain management, comfort management. For instance, our massage therapy. A lot of patients that have, they're just bedridden. They can't move. Their muscles are just aching. And providing massage therapy can not only reduce the amount of oral pain medications or different types of pain medications you may need, but just allowing them to be able to relax. It can help improve circulation. It can help, calm them. Our music therapy, I've witnessed where demented patients, something about a song will spark something from their past, and it'll bring them back to a place, and they've been able to communicate in some form or fashion. But sometimes these other therapies, if you witness them at the bedside, it can be a beautiful thing for the families to see as well. It sparks something in them that they may have not seen for years.
Is this common with other hospice programs, or is this unique to residential?
Different hospice programs offer different types of therapies or add-on therapies that are not necessarily required by Medicare, but we feel that these extra therapies are so beneficial. We've seen them in action. We also have our music therapy that do what we call legacy projects. Mm-hmm. Legacy projects are working towards a goal with a patient. For instance, we've had a patient that was a longtime music teacher in her younger years, and her goal in life was to write a song and record a song to leave behind for her husband and her family. And she was able to achieve this goal, and they played it at her memorial service.
Oh, and that's lovely.
Yeah, it was just such a beautiful thing to leave behind.
It is. What a wonderful experience. How are those activities or services paid for?
It's Medicare. It is a paid per day. So it's a paid per day, no matter what the care plan states. So it's inclusive of the medications that are related to the hospice diagnosis. It includes the DME or medical equipment that is related to the hospice diagnosis, and then all the visits that the nurse case manager orders, meaning therapies, social worker, nursing aid, all those visits that come out to see the patient and support the family as well are all included in this pay-per-day fee. So Medicare doesn't state that it's a requirement, so certain hospices, determine if that's something that they can do or if it's something that they need to put on the back burner. So.
I understand. Gotcha. We have about a minute or so here before we go to break. I wondered if you could you've given me so much information and helped all of our listening audience to understand how hospice assists the person in dying. What about a last comment on how it also supports the family?
I would say that hospice is beneficial because we're experts in pain management and understanding the disease processes, so being more proactive in knowing what's going to come next. So there's nothing more beneficial to the families and the caregivers is to not just be able to see what's happening right now, but what's going to happen next, and educate and empower those families and caregivers. And knowledge is power. If we educate them and be able to provide them an understanding of what to expect, then they're so much more able and willing to handle that.
Absolutely. Being able to feel prepared, right, to know what's coming in the process,
right,
in the experience. Right. Yeah. Okay, Wendy, thank you so much. We're going to head to break. When we return, we'll pick up our conversation and talk about grief and loss as it relates to hospice services.
You read about it in health news every day.
Cancer rates are going up. Obesity in the U.S. is on the rise. Heart disease and diabetes are top killers every year.
We can follow the advice of our doctor, but cravings persist. Weight goes up and energy is still down. It doesn't have to be like this. Tune in for Body Balance Talk with your host, Jeannie Schmidt, along with Lucy and Madeline. You'll learn how you can work with your body to feel better and look better, too. Body Balance Talk airs live every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Are you ready to laugh and learn as you get the info that will get you fit? Small steps can lead to big changes once you're headed in the right direction. Join the dynamic twin sister and exercise expert team of Alexandra Williams and Kimberly Williams Evans on Active Aging for Boom Chicka Boomers. K&A bring you top-level guests who offer active aging advice and practical tips you can use today. Enjoy the second phase of life with vitality, brain power, and energy. Active Aging for Boom Chicka Boomers airs live Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on Voice America Health and Wellness. How is your health? Do you want to know more about it? Every day there are new technologies, procedures, and healing techniques coming forward. To understand them, tune in to Speaking of Health with Dr. Michael Cudlis. Our guests come from different backgrounds in the fields of health and healing. We'll discuss new realities and modalities, from chiropractic to metagenics. It's all designed to improve your quality of life. Speaking of Health is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Joining me today is Wendy Bongiaro, and we are adding to the conversation on understanding of hospice services. Before the break, we were getting a general overview of hospice and what we might expect if we were seeking out those services. Wendy, I wanted to transition a bit and see if we can talk to our listening audience a little bit about grief and loss.
Sure. Grief and loss is definitely something, a big part of the hospice care. We do not just care for, as I said earlier, the patient, but it's the patient and the family. So the family-centered care really focuses on not just the patient while the patient's here with us, but also caring for them for 13 months after the death. So we follow the family for 13 months past the expiration. To be there for them and support them through all those firsts, you know, anniversaries, holidays, birthdays, things like that, as we know that those are going to be the most difficult.
And is that, that's an amazing service. Is that through your social services department? Is that your spiritual services? What does that look like for a recipient?
There's a bereavement department that heads up the contact of the family after expiration, but definitely our social worker and our team are involved as well, providing information and family-specific information that we would need to communicate with the bereavement department so that they can support each family, as each family's needs are going to be different. So.
Talk to me a little bit about the stages of grief and loss. You said referenced that it's a 13-month process that you follow a family. So help me to understand what someone might experience in those stages.
Sure. Well, with hospice, we definitely have an understanding of what to expect, you know, what the typical stages of grief and loss are. We're well-versed in that, and so with having an understanding of that, we're able to recognize and provide support, educational materials, bereavement support meetings on-site where families can come to if they so choose, and telephone contact, whatever each family may need. As I said, something different, but there's different stages of grief, and typically we see denial, which is where either the patient and the family can be going through this, is, you know, why me, or, you know, is this really happening, you know, questioning really what's happening to them. So they're just really stuck in a denial phase when they're either first diagnosed. Or, you know, we see this again with family members after the loved one passes and they start going through denial. Then there's a stage called anger. And then, you know, that's the, you know, angry at the diagnosis, angry, why me, why me, why me. They're, you know, really focused on being angry at the time that they don't have anymore with their loved one, or they're angry that they're, you know, missing an anniversary event or something. Then we typically see the bargaining phase, which is, you know, if I only had one more day with my loved one, what would I have done? If I only had this, that's kind of a phase where, you know, you're kind of stuck between the anger and then the next phase, which is depression. You usually see signs of depression, and maybe some being withdrawn, pulling back a little bit from loved ones, pulling back from social events, things like that, and then hopefully get to a point of the last phase, which would be acceptance. But we do see people jump around, too. You don't always have to go through each phase, and you can kind of jump back and forth. Sometimes you think you may be at acceptance, and then all of a sudden you're back at depression again. So having the bereavement department there to support the families after the expiration, and then even prior to expiration, knowing what to expect and that this is normal, allowing yourself to grieve and not hiding out and not crying and not dealing with it. You have to really push through it to actually get to the point of acceptance.
So these actual these stages to grief and loss, they're not linear in nature at all. It's a process, and you can cycle back around and move through one of the stages again, is what I hear you say.
Yes, definitely. And that's very normal, and there's nothing abnormal about it. And what the bereavement department and our team likes to do, really our goal is to educate people about that. As we were talking earlier, grief and loss, death and dying, these aren't things that, we grow up talking about or we talk about even as adults a lot of times. And so knowing that, these feelings are normal and these feelings are okay, and that you need to really work through them instead of burying them, I think it really helps to get you to that point of acceptance a lot sooner than not discussing it and not talking about it.
Outside of, the discussion and the conversation and the support through, just this understanding, are there other ways that you assist people in their grief and their loss other than just the conversational piece?
Yes, we offer, group setting type therapies. All year round, we're offering different types of bereavement support to our families, and different people really respond to different types of support. Some are sometimes weekly phone calls. Sometimes, as I said, they come to the support groups, letters, educational materials that we mail out to the families with information about where they may be at in their grieving stage, and just letting them know that we're here and that we're, ready and willing and able to talk to them because we know what they're going through.
That would seem important to me because not everybody, I'm thinking of people within my social network, and not everybody is perhaps comfortable sitting down and having that conversation and talking through feelings, especially certain generations, have not necessarily, were they promoted it to think about expressing feelings and talking those things through. So,
Well, that's the benefit of the longer you're on hospice services. If we have 2 weeks of time to really gain trust with the family and build rapport and educate them. It's a lot different than if you have 6 months with somebody. You really get to know the family and get to know the inner workings and how this death event is going to play out so that we can support them and really get to know them, build trust so that when the time does come that they do feel comfortable to reach out to us and seek us out as a real resource to them in their time of need.
Can people expect that the support hospice team will remain the consistent individuals throughout their entire experience?
Yes, it's the best type of from beginning to end. So we like to look at it that from the time of referral, when the physician refers to hospice, that from time of admission to through the end, that you have a consistent team. You have familiar faces. You have the same nurse and the same social worker. Now, of course, if somebody takes a vacation or something, you're going to be somebody covering, but they're going to work ahead of time to introduce that person so that there's just really no do-overs in hospice. And so we believe that the right way to do it is to build trust from time of admission and to have that same team follow that family throughout the whole process.
What are some common myths about grief and loss, Wendy?
Oh, there's so many. I would say that what kind of sparked one thing when we were talking a moment ago was that, it's a sign of weakness to allow anybody to see you cry or grieve openly. I know sometimes it's sometimes a generational thing with our culture, but being able to feel comfortable and be able to grieve and mourn and actually have tears and work through it is the most productive way to be able to face your grief head on and work through it to hopefully get to that point of acceptance, as we spoke of earlier. The other is that a lot of people seem to, you know, have an uncomfortable need to say it's going to be okay, or are you okay now, and where people seem to think that you need to be smiling a week later after, you know, you lost a loved one, that there's this inability to discuss openly, you know, just tell me how you're feeling, or just being able to ask questions. And so people seem to think that they need to get over it a lot quicker mm-hmm. than they really need to. So I think that's another common myth that we see in our culture, too, is that you're just supposed to get over it a lot sooner than I think you really, really do.
Yeah, our culture doesn't necessarily support that, does it? At least that's my interpretation. When I look around, it's, you know, buck up, pull up your bootstraps and move on kind of attitude.
Well, exactly. And you know, and we all kind of reinforce that, too. And I think it does go back to that, you know, the uncomfortable conversation about death. Mm-hmm. People not wanting to ask about it, and they think if they don't talk about it or you move on quickly, that you know you're going to get to that point of acceptance sooner. When in actuality, you're just burying it. You really need to talk about it and deal with your emotions as well as deal with how you're feeling about losing that loved one. So, really reaching out to the spiritual care counselors that hospice provides, the social workers, the entire team that are, you know, well-versed in death and dying, and it can help get you through those phases and reassure you that, yes, these feelings are normal.
Are part of the services that people might expect, does it include some strategies, so to speak, on how they can engage the conversation? I know for myself, you know, when I am coming into contact with somebody who has lost an important person in their life, you know, I might be at a loss for words and how I approach them. And so do you offer that those individuals strategies for how they open the conversation with others to let them know that they want to talk about it, they need to talk about it?
Yeah, yeah. In addition to pain management, the entire team is well-versed and educated, and our area of expertise is being able to have some scripting, some ideas of having those courageous conversations. But the other thing that a lot of people don't talk about, too, that hospice really tries to focus on is just to be present. Your presence alone and silence can speak volumes more than a lot of times words can at times like that. So just knowing that, you know, you as the loved one or the caregiver are sitting at the bedside of a loved one, and we know the outcome, the patient does, the caregiver does, the loved one does, but sitting there with them, and you don't really need to say any words, but your presence is more support a lot of times than words. So sometimes not worrying so much about what you're saying, but just being there.
Great advice. Sometimes hard to perhaps muster the strength when you're dealing with all the emotions, but an important contribution to make as somebody is transitioning in their life. Wendy, we're going to head to break, and when we return, we're going to pick up our conversation, and we're going to speak about end-of-life spiritual considerations.
We all want peace. We all desire a more meaningful life. We work hard to achieve these things, but at what avail? The key is authentic living with Andrea Matthews. Andrea will interview some of the great spiritual experts of today and will provide wisdom to help you raise your consciousness to the level of your own I Am. Your authenticity can give you miraculous gifts, but you have to know how to get there. Listen for Authentic Living with Andrea Matthews. Heard live every Wednesday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Seventh Wave Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Are you struggling with loss in your life?
Whether it's grief, personal healing, or serious life changers that you are dealing with, tune in to Voices for Healing with host Kathy Roberts. Everything that happens to us teaches us and gives us hope and possibility. Kathy and her guest experts will bring you the tools that you need to start the healing process. There are so many ways to transform loss. Where can we take you? Listen every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Joining me today is Wendy Bongero, VP of Clinical Services with Residential Hospice, and we are adding to our understanding of hospice services. In our third segment today, we're going to talk about end-of-life spiritual considerations. And Wendy, I wondered if you could, in general, speak about this experience and what people review in their lives towards the end of the spiritual journey.
Sure. I would say that when a patient is faced with a terminal diagnosis, there's a plethora of things that run through their mind. Not only, what are they leaving behind, but what's ahead for them. So I would say that depending on what the age of that patient may be, if they have children, are they going to be missing some major life event? But, what are they leaving behind? And mainly, the biggest fear in every patient that I've worked with is how are my loved ones going to be when I leave? What am I leaving behind? That's the biggest fear that every patient that I've ever worked with has is that a lot of times they have a hard time letting go simply because of their concerns for their spouse or their children and what kind of state they're going to be in mentally. So,
what kind of support does hospice offer to assist people in making sense of that inquiry?
From time of admission, we work with obtaining information from their primary physician, that physician that really knows that patient the best. They know their history, they know any certain circumstances and other comorbidities that patient may have, too, that they're dealing with, meaning other diagnoses that they're dealing with, too. Mm-hmm. So they may not just be dealing with the diagnosis that's brought them to hospice, but they may have other health concerns as well. So we really try to obtain a thorough history from that primary physician and work collaboratively with that doctor, but then also go in and assess the spiritual care needs of that patient, meaning, had they followed a religion throughout their life, what their fears may be, what their concerns may be about that, if there's particular cultural things that they need to follow, depending on their religion, that we make sure that we communicate that to the team so that we can follow through on their wishes as well. Regarding certain cultures don't only want female care workers for female patients, and whatever their particular culture may request, that we are able to provide that to them through their end of life. And that goes back to the dignity piece, too, that we talked about earlier. So I would say that we go in and assess what their specific individual needs are and make sure that that happens. Then we communicate with our spiritual care team and assign a spiritual care worker that's going to be able to meet the needs of that individual patient and family. And then they follow them throughout their stay with hospice and also loop in bereavement to do any pre-bereavement needs. Say, for instance, if there's young children, then we will set aside a particular care plan for those children to help get them to a place of understanding and support of what's going on. Because as you can imagine, an adult would grieve and be able to have an understanding of this hospice diagnosis much differently than a 12-year-old or an 8-year-old. So a lot of times we need to really look at, you know, what this patient's coming to us with, meaning their family and the loved ones they're going to leave behind, and then determine what they need individually.
Wow, that's a tremendous support. I know that you represent Residential Hospice, which is a regionally based organization. Can people expect that from all hospice agencies, that type of end-of-life spiritual consideration and support?
Yes. Medicare requires that spiritual care is a part of the core team, the core services that hospice must provide. And regardless of your insurance, hospice really follows the Medicare guidelines as far as what the core services would be. And that would be, as we spoke of earlier, the physician, nurse, social worker, spiritual care counselor. Those are all the core services of the team. And then the other services would be dependent on which hospice that you choose.
Okay. You've talked about some of the common spiritual questions that pop up, like what caring for my family, what's going to happen to my family after I'm gone, what happens to me when I'm gone. Are there any other common questions that you want to share with the listening audience that support us to make sense of what people are facing at end of life?
Sure. Well, like we spoke of earlier, what comes next and the fear of the unknown, I would say. And then a lot of times people do feel that even if they didn't follow a religious path throughout life, that they question if their life choices will determine, what will happen to them in the life beyond here. So a lot of times they have a desire to be forgiven for a life that they may have chosen. They may want to reconnect with loved ones. And so the role of our hospice social worker is to help them work through those, maybe reach out to a loved one that they haven't spoken to in years and try to make that happen, in addition to with the spiritual care counselor. So it's a very collaborative type of care to try to meet the needs of that patient. But a lot of times you will see that it's just a need to be forgiven, a need to clear their mind, and a need to know that they're going to leave behind peace and know that they've made peace with the loved ones that they may have had butted heads with in the past.
What a tremendous gift to support people as they are getting close to transitioning and reconciling that heavy heart, that those are some tough conversations I'm sure to have, but what a wonderful gift to give somebody at this stage of their life.
Yes, it is.
I'm wondering if there are other resources out there that you can talk about if somebody is interested in knowing more about hospice services or even end-of-life spiritual considerations, any of the topics we've been talking about. Are there some resources that you could point people towards?
Sure. Well, the best resource is to always reach out to hospice, to reach out to the people that do hospice the best, and that's the people that work for hospice. So at any time, even if you're not on service, hospice could direct you to what may help you out the most, if it's a social worker need, spiritual care need. So visiting the website is the best resource of all. Secondly, there is a book that many hospices use and recommend to their families, and it's called Gone From My Sight by Barbara Carnes. You could Google that or look it up on the Internet. And hospice sometimes calls it the hospice blue book, but it has it's an easy read, and it has a very laid out to where you can have an understanding of what's going to happen now. So say 6 months before hospice diagnosis, this is where this patient is at, and it's a physical expression or physical description of what your loved one may look like, meaning their physical ability, their eating, their mental ability, and then kind of what they look like as they continue to move through the disease process. And regardless of what disease process you're going through, there's so many similarities between the decline. Whether it's a cancer diagnosis or a cardiac diagnosis, you see so many similarities of decline. And so if you read that and you recognize some of these symptoms, in your loved ones, then it might be a good idea to have those courageous conversations with your primary physician to say, you know, I'm really recognizing some of these things with my dad or with my mother. What do you think about that? And as I stated earlier, the sooner you're on hospice services and get that support to help guide you through all those stages, the better off you're going to be when that time does come.
Repeat that. You know, I was trying to write the name of the title down. Was it Gone From My Sight?
Gone From My Sight.
Okay.
And the author is Barbara Karn. She's a hospice nurse. And you might hear it be called the Hospice Blue Book as well. So a lot of hospices do provide this literature to their patients and loved ones.
I'm wondering if you could clear up some perhaps something that might be unknown to folks. Is hospice just a service that is inpatient, or is it outpatient? Is it both? Where do people receive hospice services, and are there any limitations, I guess, really is my question. Are there limitations to where you can receive it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Hospice has what we call four different levels of care. And the four different levels of care are a patient can receive hospice in a inpatient setting, meaning a hospital setting, but there's certain criteria that you have to meet to meet that inpatient criteria, meaning imminent death or an intractable pain crisis that you can't manage at home. Those are some examples of how that patient may need to be in the hospital or an inpatient unit. There's routine level of care, which is typically the norm of the majority of time that you would be on hospice, meaning that patient has an expected disease process going on. There's nothing that you can't manage at the bedside. So that routine level of care could be in a skilled nursing facility setting. It could be in assisted living or adult foster care, or it could be in your own home or the patient's home. The third level of care is called respite. Medicare does allow for a 5-day stay that Medicare pays for in a skilled nursing facility. Say if there's caregiver burnout or there's a need to determine if maybe down the road placement is going to be in the future for this patient, and Medicare will pay for 5 days of a respite stay for a patient, and that's determined on individual needs. So that would be another level of care. So say a patient was at home and the family was getting all burned out and they had to round up the troops and get a better plan set up, hospice would help to assist to set up 5 days of paid skilled nursing facility care and allow that family the time to set up and do what they need to do. And lastly, there's a level of care called continuous care. And that would be a continuous amount of skilled care, meaning nursing care and FEMA care, aid care, and that would be at a minimum of 8 hours in a 24-hour period, and typically we use that in the home setting, and where a patient had, say, like a pain crisis, and we were titrating meds and collaborating with a physician, but we were in the home for an extended period of time, say 8 hours, and managing that pain crisis, and then once that crisis was at bay and we've got it under control, they would go back to a routine level of care. So we can provide care in all those different settings, and it just is determined on where that patient is at.
Okay, Wendy, we're going to head to break, and on the other side, we're going to talk about some frequently asked questions that come up.
Every weekend, take some time out of your schedule for New Reflections, featuring Dr. Adam Rubenstein. It's a show about all things aesthetic, from skincare to plastic surgery, health and beauty. You'll learn about the aesthetic products and procedures to embrace or avoid. Each show will feature live, virtual, interactive consultations that you'll be able to follow along with, and featured guests from the world of beauty and aesthetics. Listen Saturdays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific, for New Reflections with Dr. Adam Rubenstein on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment rising to levels not seen since the Great Depression.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Sit back. Close your eyes. Relax. Have you explored the possibilities of yoga? It transcends time, space, and culture. It has healing properties, and it can be done by anyone. Tune in to Yoga Begins Now with Mark and Heather Cherie Titus. Mark and Heather are the team behind the Sedona Yoga Festival. Our program will bring yoga out of the studio and into your life with lively discussions, special guests, and an in-depth exploration of modern yoga. Yoga Begins Now. Join us every Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. If you're joining the conversation, this is your host, Stacy Starling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Joining me today is Wendy Bongiaro, VP of Clinical Services with Residential Hospice, and she is adding to our understanding of hospice services. In this segment, we're going to be addressing some frequently asked questions that come up as we all try to make sense of hospice and understand what it means for us or a loved one who's being faced with these decisions. Wendy, I thought we could just start off with something that's very common and we lack understanding around is why would somebody use hospice and not just go to the hospital?
I would say that the biggest reason to use hospice is to not go through this alone. You can continue to treat that disease process curatively, but the experts in pain management and a palliative approach, meaning non-curative measures to treat that disease process, the experts really are the hospice team. So.
And so those experts that you're referring to, that hospice team, how are they trained?
We have specific and continued education on pain management, end-of-life care. Medicare has many requirements, and those change yearly as to what we need to do and provide for our patients and families. So symptom management, pain management, end-of-life disease processes, and care of not just the patient but the entire family.
I've heard the term, or the phrase rather, used benefit versus burden. What does that mean?
Yes, that's a term that we definitely use frequently. Think about it. We go through our whole life and we seek curative measures. So we're always going to the doctor and taking this medication for that or doing this, trying this treatment for this. And so it is a completely different mindset to decide that you're no longer going to seek curative measures for that disease process and allow nature to take its course. So the benefit versus burden conversation is very beneficial to the family because it's just a different mindset, a different way of thinking. It's not a way that we've ever thought before. So when you say those terms, say, for instance, a patient comes to you and they're asking, if I'm on hospice, can I continue to take this medication? Or if I'm on hospice, can I continue to have this treatment? Well, the conversation really needs to be individualized and surrounding that particular patient and their disease process. Where are they in their disease process? And benefit versus burden is, would this treatment or medication benefit this patient, or would it be burdensome to them? And so we need to have those conversations and open conversations with the patient and the family. Is this still really in their best interest to continue to seek these treatments?
It really sounds like such an individualized approach in that we don't have to be a one-size-fit-all, which the medical model often is, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. Yes, that's the biggest difference. One of the biggest differences between curative versus a palliative approach, too, is that, you know, each disease process and then each patient alone within that disease process, their whole end-of-life experience is going to play out differently.
And it's so much more holistic in nature as well, which I really am grateful, I think, for, is that it takes into consideration a person's physical health, but also that mental health, the emotional wellness, spiritual wellness, all of those things. So it's much more holistic.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And very open to the idea and accepting of the fact that, you know, you can't cure everything with just a medication, that you really need to, you know, allow them to get to a place of peace in their spirituality. You need to allow them to discuss financials and funeral planning and feel like they're getting everything set up for their loved ones and not being a burden on them, in addition to the symptom management and the disease process and the pain that the disease may be causing, too. It can be spiritual pain or physical, you know, not just physical pain. It can be more than just that.
Do volunteers play a role in the hospice services?
Yes, very much so, very much so. The volunteers play a vital role in not just things that go on in the background, meaning arranging for things that go on in the background in the office setting for the patients and families, but also bedside support. We offer a beautiful service for our veterans, which is a pinning service in honor of them, and it means so much to these patients and families. So they really put together a lot of different programs to meet the needs and of individual needs of our patients and families that the core team doesn't provide. They have another whole add-on experience for the patients and families that, as I said, that it's just so much more than what the core services are.
If somebody wanted to give some volunteer service, how might they go about that, Wendy?
Typically, volunteers will advertise in local churches or papers, but within any hospice, if you Google hospices in your area, there's volunteer programs that you could reach out to them and seek more information for them about how you could volunteer. And if you would be more interested in office volunteering or bedside volunteering, there's different types of it, but there's all hospices always have open arms and more than willing to entertain more volunteers.
If you talked about the difference between being a bedside volunteer and, I'm sorry, what was the other one that you mentioned, bedside or?
In office volunteer.
Oh, office, okay.
We have volunteers that stitch quilts and knit blankets for our patients.
Oh, nice.
And beautiful blankets and quilts that they provide. So there's so many different services that volunteers provide that you may not even see them at the bedside, but they're, as I said, doing things that are creating comfort for our patients that, and you may not even ever meet them. So
if somebody wanted to do the bedside volunteering, is there special credentials that they need or a certification that they need to go through? Anything important?
Yes, they go through a volunteer training, which the hospice, our hospice provides, and so they would arrange for a time to meet the needs of that volunteer to come in and provide that training to them and that certification so that they can do the bedside volunteering and be able to volunteer if that's what they so choose to do.
Okay. One last quick question before we move to closing today's show. You have mentioned several times that you can learn more about hospices in local communities via the Google function on the computer. What if we are not computer savvy? How else might people find out about hospice services in their area?
I would recommend then speaking to your primary physician. Your primary physician would have experience with recommendations of particular services, whether it be home care or hospice services in your area, and could provide you with some options and some recommendations of what he or she may choose.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Wendy. Today we discussed hospice services, and I want to thank Wendy for joining me and sharing her important perspectives. We will post links to Wendy's contact information and all of the resources mentioned today on our website at starlingcenter.org on the radio tab. You can learn more about residential hospice at residentialhospice.com. Thank you for tuning in. This is Stacey Starling. Remember, you can go to our show links on my Voice America host page. There you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit us at starlingcenter.org.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Murmuration, Critical Transitions, and Transformation. Please join your host, Stacey Starling, for another edition next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll answer more of your questions next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.